reflecting. So here we go. It's 1967. I'm standing in front of a mirror getting ready for school. And in the bathroom that I'm in, there's a big yellow towel. It's a little bit damp because I've used it to get ready. And just because I'm fooling around, I'm 7 years old at this point, I'm fooling around, not wanting to go to school. I grab that towel, shake it out, and I throw it over my head, and I fling my luscious, luscious long hair because it's so much fun, and that's who I want to be, the girl with the long, luxurious hair. You can see it's different now. It's blonde, but maybe not as blonde as it should be, but very short. At that time, it was just a little game, and it was a lot of fun. But what I didn't realize is that there were shades of what was shaping my identity at that time in my life. I was identifying with the images that I saw around me in magazines, at school, on TV, and they were very beautiful. But that's kind of what I saw as what I wanted to be. and that, just to let me name that. For me, my sister and I, we would call it, when we do that little towel game, we would call it our white girl hair towel game. Because all the white girls at our school had long, flowing blonde hair. So, well, every time I went to my aunt's house to get my nappy hair done and wait for her to put the relaxer on to make it soft and straight, I would dream of the openings in the cartoon called The Jetsons. Do you remember The Jetson? There's George Jetson, that one. Well, in that cartoon, there was a frame in which Mrs. Jetson would sit down to get her hair done, and this little hairdryer thing would come over her head, and poof, it was done. I was like, oh, I want that to be me so badly. But not so. My nappy hair caused all kinds of trouble. If I let it dry, my mom would comb through it and yank it and say, why did you let the stuff dry? And at that time, I would agonize and think, why can't I be different? Why can't my hair be different? Why can't my life be different? Another identity piece that I didn't know that I was struggling with at that time in my youth. When all we are hit those issues of identity, they kind of shape us. Usually those issues form around hair or even around the lightness and the darkness of our skin. Just through conversations I've had with Florence, she's had to deal with those issues. She's a what we call high yellow. you have to deal with issues of with other people of color about your skin tones. And I was really light when I was very young, and so I dealt with a lot of that. I remember reading in Genesis 1:27, this verse reads, so God created human beings in his own image. They were created godlike, reflecting God's nature. God created them male and female. Now, as I'm reflecting, I want to jump to church. This was another big shaper of my identity. In church, I began to learn of what God's nature looked like. And it would take me a while before I would really accept that I was made in God's nature. I was grounded in principles of faith coming up in the Baptist church. I sat on the front row every Sunday or in the choir stand where my parents had made us sing. I went to a Black Baptist church. And I make that distinction because it's a very important distinction for how my identity developed. And I'll go, stay with me, we'll go there a little bit on. But while I was in the church, I had a lot of friends and a lot of family members who I attended church with. And while there, I would get, people would talk to me and say things like, "You speak funny," or "You're different," or things like, "You listen to weird music." Well, coming up, when I grew up, my home was in Overland Park, Kansas, which is a white neighborhood. We were one of the second Black families in this neighborhood in 1960. And so you can imagine our presence there was very disrupting for the neighborhood. And it was disrupting for our family life. When I would go to church, my tone, the way that I speak, the way that I engage, kind of like I do today, represented the community where I lived. The music I listened to, the way that I envisioned myself was all based on the white community that I grew up in. And as a result of that, I was a little confused about who I was. Now, during that time in the white community, when I would go back there, what I found was when I'd go to class, there were jokes, the jokes about the Black people or the use of the N-word. There were some teachers who were prejudiced and didn't like my presence there, and so they had to teach me. And in their teachings, they would do things to call me out, to talk about things like the Black Panthers or like I knew. I mean, I was a kid. But what I found interesting is that there was a sense of partial acceptance, total. The things that made me back in that day were dating and going to proms and going to dances. I would never be found in any of those because the white boys did not want to ask people like me out. And so where I found myself on the days of dances and things like that was at Denny's working, serving the very schoolmates that I went to school with. The reason I draw these two pictures out for you about church and about home is that there is a sense of not being accepted in either community, totally not being accepted totally for who I am. And so I didn't understand that that was what was going on. I just knew that there was something happening. I didn't know the word identity, and I didn't understand that that how I was suffering. I didn't come to know that until I became an adult. Let's move ahead to college. So I went to college, and of course the first thing I saw, all the Black kids at the back table on one side of the room, and everybody else that was white everywhere else. And this was a predominantly white college. So where do I sit? This was a dilemma for me because I thought, okay, do I go back to the Black table or do I go to the white, who I identify with? Well, I went to the white because that's who I identified with. What I realized is that I didn't know how to interact with any other Black people of color outside of church. I didn't know how to fit into that community and how I fit. I just didn't get it. Well, that was a real eye-opener for me. And then what I discovered, there was nothing I knew about history. I knew about the Martin Luther King, and I knew about, who's the peanut guy, Carver, George Washington Carver. Oh, you're good. But I didn't know anything else. And so I had a big void in my life that I had to try to fill. I want to back up even a little further. I've kind of taken you through my school history, but I think this void will make sense when I go back to my mom and dad, how they reared me. Well, mom and dad married at a very young age. Mom was about 14, dad was 15. They married because my mom became pregnant with my oldest brother. It was not because of love. And dad raped mom, and the result of that was pregnancy. And in that day, what you did was you got married. You didn't try to figure it out or go to social work. That for most black families where there's a woman involved, that didn't exist. Mom would suffer the next years through beatings, my dad's adultery, the birth of three children, and then divorce. My dad suffered through the ignorance perpetuated by lack of knowledge and education. He suffered by not having strong parenting to teach him how to be a man in this world. He suffered from internal racial oppression. Both struggled with knowing their own identity. You know, I applaud my mom because even though she struggled with this and still struggles with it today, she had the foresight to take me to an organization called Jack and Jill, where I would meet with other black students and they would try to get fill a little bit of that void of identity by sharing a bit of the black experience in this small group. And then she said she always wanted us to be able to go move in and out of people of color and all the races with ease. So by the time I got out of college, and I'm on my own working as an adult, I find that I think to myself, well, you know, I really don't have any issues with racism. I like everybody. I didn't see color. And literally, I didn't. Until I was confronted with it face to face, and seems like on the job or when someone would point out or give us or that's when I saw color. So I guess what I found is that I hadn't filled that big hole about identity, and I didn't know how to. Now let's fast forward to today. So today I find myself in all places, Maryland, Silver Spring, Maryland, and Washington, D.C., attending church at a very liberal-minded church in which everything about this church is different than what I ever learned about church. It's community church. It's chaotic. It's crazy. But it's good. You know, it's really good that we open up issues and really address them and talk about them. So I want to share a little experience Steve and I. Don actually introduced us to the Damascus Road, and she invited us to come to a meeting. And we are sitting at the table, and we were just observing. We're listening to everybody talk and have really emotional conversations. And I remember leaving that night with Steve saying, "Those people are so angry." It is funny. You can laugh. I mean, that's what we said. Well, little did I know. I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't understand. And I went to the Seeing with New Eyes training, and that's where I first had the most profound lessons about identity, where I learned about myself. I learned that because of racial oppression through the years and how it's come down the pike, and it's just like a rolling ball that's gotten out of control, all of those things I internalized in my youth, all of those things that happened long before I was ever born in the world, with slavery and with Jim Crow laws, all of that has made its way and found a home in me. And when I did not understand, but what the training helped me to realize is that that big hole, that big void in my life was there because something put it there. Up until then, I thought I was lacking in some way, that I just didn't get it, or maybe I wasn't smart enough or fast enough or strong enough to run with the sharks or swim with the sharks and be in the most successful places that people were in. But what I learned is that there is a reason, that void. And that was liberating for me. It lightened my load significantly. Just the knowing. And then I had an opportunity to learn, such as in my mission group where we have vital discussions about racism, and I get to talk out my frustration, my fear, my anger, and I have people who will receive me and receive the words that spew out of my mouth with loving kindness. I get to learn how to forgive. I get to learn how to be me. So today, the woman, I told myself I wasn't going to cry, but you guys know better, don't you? You know me by now. today, I find myself a very strong, proud Black woman. And that is not, it is one of those sayings that people say. I find strength in my walk because I know I have knowledge now about how I came to be me. That verse, Psalm 139, has been, for me, a lifesaver. Back when I was in my junior high days, in church, we had to learn the 139th Psalm. And, you know, I just did it because we won something at the end if we memorized it. So I got my little prize and all was great. But I didn't realize how that verse would sustain me and support me over the years. When I read the words, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going outs and my lying down, and you are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me." I believe that over all of those years, God has been bringing me to this place where I can share my story with you and tell you that I know about me now, and I'm still learning more, and it's astounding to me. I know that over the past few years as an adult, it's been difficult working. I go into situations, to jobs, and I know I have all this skill to offer, and I felt for some reason I don't measure up to the others. So I wouldn't work or push ahead to be a leader or to be promoted. I would just stay safe. I think some of my bosses over the years were very disappointed in me because of that. And I have been fired from a couple of jobs where I stayed safe became angry, and internalized things, put stuff into that hole, that big void that doesn't belong there. Today I'm working and I feel so confident about who I am. I feel like I can go to my boss and have a conversation and that he will listen and that I'm supposed to be there and that he needs to hear what I have to say. I haven't always felt that way, but it's so freeing to be that way. A good part of it is learning about internalized racial oppression and how that's impacted me, and learning about my identity and reclaiming it. And the other part of it is hormones. Oh my gosh, that's another sermon. We're getting a little too serious. Thank you. But I'm happy for the place where I find myself today and would never have believed that I could have been here. Let me tell you how this has impacted me as a musician. I love singing, and you know that. But it is so difficult for me, even today, to reach out to other musicians and say, will you come play in a band with me? It's difficult for me to get in front of a group of musicians and perform. If I make a mistake, I think I'm harder on myself than anybody. Because of that, it's been difficult for me to progress my career as a musician. Steve he's kicked me in the butt all he can. But right now, it's on me. I have some behaviors to unlearn, and so I'm going to get help because I need to keep talking these things through. But I'm getting help from a place of strength and confidence, knowing that my life has been significantly changed, knowing about my identity. Excuse me. So I'm getting to the close. I just want to tell you, we've struggled with that word racism in our congregation and are struggling right now with it. But I want you to let you know your struggle is not in vain. You have a life standing before you who has significantly changed because of the conversations, because of the struggle that we are in together. And I thank you. I thank you for being in that place. It has meant so much to me. And if I leave here today and have to go to another country, this place would have changed my life in humongous ways. I love you. Amen.
There's those two.
And that thing.
So, Karen, we love you too. And we'll take a few moments of silence. Mm-hmm.